he know? Did he know how much he scared me? But how much I loved him? She rolled onto her stomach and rested her chin on her hands. Did he suffer? Physically? Or emotionally? Because I did. You did everything you could for him, Cassie encouraged. You went to all your doctor's appointments. You ate right. You found him a family that could provide for him. You did that out of love, Misty. He didn't suffer from your choices. Because you did what you thought was best. Poe nodded. He was surrounded with love. And I bet it protected him from all the negative.
But you don't believe the same about your sister? Misty asked.
I don't know. I don't know anything anymore.
She hated pain, Misty said. She couldn't stand the sight of blood or guts. Even if she stubbed her toe, she acted like her arm was cut off or something.
But she loved scary movies, Cassie added.
And musicals, Misty said. If she made me watch High School Musical once, I swear she made me watch it 100 times. And often all 3. In order.
I was telling Cole the same thing the other day, Poe said with a small smile. He caught me listening to one of the songs. My music was on shuffle, and it started playing.
That's a magical moment right there, Misty said. Maybe she's trying to reach you through Troy and Gabriella. The girls laughed.
Misty sat back up and looked over at Poe. But you.
You don't really like horror movies. Or being scared. Yet you're willing to look at a monster like Joshua straight in the face.
He doesn't scare me. What else can he take from me? My life? I don't feel like I have much of one anymore anyway. I just think if he was going to take one of us, it obviously should have been me. Maybe I could handle it better than her. Maybe I was meant to.
I don't know if anyone could handle that, Poe. Not even you.
Maybe not, but still. I hear it all the time at the funeral home. At least they didn't suffer, or I hope they didn't suffer.
Again, she looked directly at Misty.
Right?
Misty nodded.
That's what tortures people and makes them crazy in the head. It's all that wondering about how much their loved ones suffered. It's what I think about.
It's what you think about. Cassie reached out and held Poe's right hand.
Your sister wouldn't want you obsessing about that. She'd want you to remember her as she was when she was with you. With us. Laughing and talking up a storm.
Giving Cole a hard time. The mess. Misty chuckled. Such the mess.
My parents and Nana are so out of it. They're doing everything they can to escape thinking about it or talking about it, but I need to talk about her. I miss her, Poe whispered, and I'm starting to forget her. What she sounded like. All those quirky things she'd say and wear.
Is that why you became Poe? Poe felt as if the world suddenly started spinning faster around her. Trying to be more like Dylan? Taking on some of her personality, the way she dressed. You're trying to stay connected to her, somehow.
Misty's questions felt like a revelation. Tears immediately developed in Poe's eyes. Is that what I'm doing? It makes some sense, actually, Cassie said. You're trying to hold on to her. You're escaping as much as your parents are. You're just doing it in a different way. I don't know what I'm doing anymore. Poe admitted. Ever since the sheriff showed up and said other girls went missing, I've felt lost in a really dark place. Remember the light she was, Cassie encouraged. Please don't let the darkness you're feeling take away the light that she gave while she was here. If you do, then evil wins. It's stealing your joy. It's winning. Evil is winning in you, Poe. Don't let it. Don't let that man and the need to avenge Dylan
destroy your life anymore.
Yeah.
Misty took Poe's left hand in hers and squeezed it tight.
Stare it down.
7 a.m. The wind flowing through Poe's hair seemed to take some of the chaotic thoughts with it. Her mind no longer raced, and from her spot at the playground, she felt a little more at peace. Even her grip on the swing chains loosened.
Poe?
She opened her eyes, drug her feet on the ground to stop the swing, and turned toward the voice.
Brody, you scared me to death.
He stepped a bit closer.
Did you not hear me pull up? Said your name a few times.
I was sort of out of it. Sorry.
He walked to the empty swing next to her and sat down. His wide girth barely fit between the swing's chains.
What are you doing out so early?
She asked.
I had to pick up my sound system from the cove.
She shook her head, feeling stupid for not thinking.
We left a mess. How bad is it?
By the time I got there, it was all picked up.
I appreciate you donating the speakers and everything.
No problem.
He waved it off, but sat in complete stillness.
Forget about me. What are you doing out so early?
I was at Cassie's, talking some things through.
Gotcha.
I went out for a walk and ended up at her house. It was good, though.
You walked? Need a ride back home?
Nah.
I'm good.
He stood up.
I don't think it's safe for you to be out all by yourself like this.
Please, let me give you a ride.
Come on.
I'll get you back.
Seeing as her feet were still on fire from almost a full day of walking on hot Mississippi pavement, she acquiesced and followed him to his truck.
You okay?
He asked as they climbed into the cab.
I guess so.
You seemed kind of out of it when I pulled up.
He checked the side mirror, made sure nobody was coming up behind him, and pulled onto the road.
I was just thinking.
About what?
Oh, you don't need to crawl inside my messed up mind.
His eyebrow cocked as he glanced over at her.
You think your mind's messed up?
I know it is.
Don't be so hard on yourself.
I'm not being hard on myself. I'm being honest.
Okay. So why do you think that?
She looked down at her hands, which had begun to fidget.
'Cause I'm doing things that make no sense. I'm going crazy.
You seem pretty sane to me. Who's telling you you're crazy? She gulped.
Nobody, I guess.
Or just me, telling myself.
He didn't respond. She turned to face him.
Can I ask you a question?
He laughed, which slightly improved the mood inside the truck cab.
You always say that to me before you ask a question. And I always say yes. Might as well quit asking and just get to the question.
He had a point.
Okay.
She took a few moments to find her wording.
How did your dad die? Did he suffer at all?
He blinked hard.
Oh, I wasn't expecting that.
Poe grimaced, regretted she'd even asked. But no matter how carefully she tried to word the question, it would never be an easy one to answer. The mood in the truck returned to feeling morose.
Overdose.
Brody scratched his head and readjusted his position in the seat.
Some people think he did it on purpose,
he added.
I'm sorry.
His fingers gripped the steering wheel, and he stared at the road in front of him.
How did you find a way to cope with it?
He shrugged.
Just did.
Wish I could.
I guess we all gotta find our own way.
Poe thought over her conversations with Misty and Cassie, and now Brody. So many people lost so much. Loss surrounded her. She wasn't as alone as she'd thought.
I'm sorry, Brody.
For what?
For never asking you before now.
She sighed, and leaned her head against the window. For being so wrapped up in my own stuff that I didn't even see that you had stuff, too.
You've got nothing to apologize for. We're family. We're good.
They stayed quiet until he pulled the truck to a stop in front of her house and put it in park. She exhaled and then looked toward her house. Thanks for the ride.
Anytime. Oh, and Winnie's paint came in yesterday. We need to plan a time for you to bring her in. Give me a call later, and we'll set it up.
I'll do that.
She opened the door. Hey, he said before she hopped out. I heard last night on the police scanner that they were looking for Joshua. Know what that's about?
Yeah, they wanted to ask him a few things. They're probably questioning him now.
Nah, I just saw him down at the cove. He was getting there when I left.
Did you talk to him?
Just for a minute. He was drunk, saying something about an angel and the platform. I was afraid he was going to try to swim out there. Made him promise he'd stay on land.
He shrugged.
Ah, well. I'm sure the cops will find him.
He smiled over at her.
You best get inside.
We wouldn't want your mama to worry. She sighed. No, we wouldn't. Thanks for the ride.
Poe shut the door, watched Brody drive away, and started the walk across the yard. Her mind raced at the same speed she ran the pendant across her necklace.
That platform sure has seen a victim or two.
She heard Joshua's voice in her head, his words on the day of the King of the Mountain Championship. She stopped walking and looked down at her necklace. A gold angel. 7:45 a.m. The waters of the cove were calm. Its surface, smooth like glass. Poe stood on the edge of the shore and stared out at the platform, peacefully floating in the middle of the water.
Are you out there? She yelled across the water. Is that where you're waiting for me?
She took several steps into the water.
I've looked for you everywhere. Why won't you talk to me? I waited in the closet, but you didn't come. I counted, but the storm is still right here. I sat out in the cemetery with the twins, thinking you might tell me, but you didn't. What are you waiting for?
She closed her eyes and focused on the sounds around her. The birds, the leaves ruffling in the wind, and the tiny waves that rolled onto shore. She walked into the water until it reached her shoulders and swam to the platform. It was the first time she'd been in the water since the day her sister went missing. But it felt familiar, like the time hadn't passed, a year hadn't been spent waiting, losing herself. She took a deep breath and plunged deep into the water and underneath the platform. Her eyes opened as she strained to see through the murky water. Her arms flailed around as if she would eventually touch her sister and be able to pull her close. But her skin only made contact with the algae that covered the yellow barrels. She ran out of breath and broke through the surface. Her nose and mouth barely had enough room to take in the air beneath the slats of wood. Tired of kicking her legs under the weight of her wet clothes, she threaded her fingers through the spaces between each board and grabbed a hold with her fingertips.
Talk to me. It was Joshua, wasn't it? Please, talk to me.
She tilted her head back as far as possible, kept her face close to the moss-covered planks, and moved along the perimeter. Poe took a deep breath, submerged herself deep into the water. Moments before running out of breath, she swam towards the surface and broke through with a deep inhale. Over and over again, she immersed herself in the water, waited until the last moment, then fiercely kicked her legs and returned to the surface. Becoming desperate, Poe sank as far as possible, then kicked her way to the surface again. When her head popped out of the water, it smacked into a metal barrel. She surfaced, opened her eyes, and ran her hands across it.
Oh, algae, she said, Her voice sounded thick to her ears, as if it was drowning in the water that seeped into her mouth. After clearing her head and her airway, Poe slipped her fingers through the slats above her and moved along underneath the platform until she bumped into another large piece of metal. Again, she ran a hand over it. It was completely smooth. She searched again, found a third barrel, and ran her hand across it. Smooth. Poe felt along every inch of the barrel, every ridge, every seam. At the mouth of the barrel, she cupped her hand over the circular rim and tried to twist the cap. But as she turned her fingers, a small metal chain wrapped around the nozzle and rotated under her grip. With the fingers from one hand gripped between the planks, she felt along the chain as it drifted in the water until she came upon an item that hung from the end. She knew the piece of metal well. Her fingers traced it several times a day. The pendant was identical to the one that hung from the thin chain around her neck. No. Her fingers lost their grip. She slipped under the water and guzzled a mouthful of water. She surfaced again. No! She spit the water out of her mouth and wrestled the chain off the neck of the nozzle. Once it was free, she plunged back into the water and emerged outside the platform, slipped her arm through the ladder and hung, exhausted and unable to tread water or swim toward the shore. She pressed her cheek against the wooden ladder and sobbed. Cole sped down Cove Trails Road and screeched to a halt in the parking lot next to Winnie. He jumped out of the truck, raced around to the RV side, and threw open the door. Poe? He could hear his voice shake and feel his heart pound in his chest. Poe! He slammed the door shut and raced down the trail and onto the beach. As soon as his feet touched the sand, he spotted her clutching the platform ladder. Poe! He pulled out his phone, dialed, then anxiously paced in a tight circle. As soon as Mr. Brave answered, he shouted, "I found her. She's at the cove again. Bring an ambulance. She looks hurt." Cole yanked off his shoes, ran through the water until it reached his thighs, and then dove in and swam quickly toward the platform, working to keep his head above the water so his hearing aids wouldn't get wet. His soaked clothes weighed him down, but he kept his arms moving and sliced through the water, pulling himself closer to her. "Poe!" Cole finally reached the ladder. "Poe!" He skipped the steps and used his arms to thrust himself onto the platform and then pulled her out of the water. He sat down and scooped her into his lap and wrapped his arms around her. "You scared us. The police went looking for Josh and couldn't find him. Brody told your mom that he dropped you off at the house, but you weren't there. I found Dylan's necklace." Poe slowly reached up and gripped onto his wet shirt. He noticed the familiar chain and pendant hanging from her fingers. "I finally found her." 8:30 a.m. Poe and Cole stood huddled together, sharing a blanket. It was a hot day out, but they both continued to shiver, probably more from the shock than the temperature in the air. Cole looked around the perimeter of the beach. It was cordoned off with yellow police tape, but that didn't stop the gawkers. News must have traveled fast, because they stood by the dozens and watched the dive team retrieve the three barrels, place them on the platform, haul them back to the beach, and inspect them one by one. After hours out on the water, Sheriff Jackson and three other officers finally disembarked from the police boat and silently walked to Mr. and Mrs. Brave, who stood a few feet away. An aura of sadness hung in the air like a dense fog. "David? Lori?" Sheriff Jackson said as he walked up to them. He paused, fumbling as he searched for the words. "Just say it," Mrs. Brave sputtered. "Just tell us." He took a deep breath, glanced over at Poe.
Three bodies.
Her mom gasped and threw her hands over her mouth. Poe stood motionless. When Cole looked down at her, her eyes showed no sign of life. He slipped his hand in hers and gripped it tight.
No, 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 no,
her mom whimpered.
I'm so sorry,
Sheriff Jackson said. We don't have positive identifications yet. We'll run DNA tests, but...
But what?
Her dad asked.
All brunettes.
Mid to late teens. The remains are at different stages of decomposition, which would point to their deaths taking place at different times.
Cause of death?
He asked. He acted more mortician than father. He snuck a peek at Poe, then shook his head and grimaced.
How did she die?
He corrected.
Looks like blunt force trauma on the back of the skull.
Cole recoiled at the description, but noticed no movement from a still petrified Poe.
I pray she didn't suffer,
Mr. Brave added, then clumsily wiped at one eye. The officer stood quietly and let the family absorb the information. The silence at the beach and parking lot was overwhelming. A solemn moment that everyone feared would come, but sadly expected. Mrs. Brave began to walk toward the water's edge, but only made it a few steps before she dropped to the sand in sobs. Her husband fell to her side, and Cole saw them embrace for the first time since meeting them back in the eighth grade, when he showed up at the Brave funeral home with his first flower delivery.
Cole, can I talk to you?
Sheriff Jackson asked. Cole nodded, removed the blanket from his shoulders, and wrapped it around Poe. Then followed the sheriff to the center of the beach.
What sort of state was she in when he found her?
Cole shook his head, not even wanting to recall what he saw.
She was clean to the platform's ladder.
She was in shock, just staring across the water. I don't even know if she saw me swim up to her.
And she had the necklace.
Yes, she had a tight grip on it, but it was obvious that it matched the one she wears every day. The sheriff sighed, and he rubbed his temples.
Did you look underneath?
No, sir. I just sat there with her until you showed up. Sheriff Jackson turned toward the beach and watched two officers in the direction of the boat.
I best head back out. We've got more evidence to collect.
He placed his hand on Cole's shoulder and squeezed tight.
Stay close to her. She'll need you. I'm not so sure her parents will be able to comfort her. They're grieving enough on their own.
Cole watched the sheriff walk to the boat, climb in, and head back to the platform. The man's head hung in defeat.
He's got to be close.
The realization hit Cole like a ton of bricks. If the bodies were found under the platform, that meant that the kidnapper was close and knew the importance the platform played in Cornwall. For the first time since Poe mentioned the possibility, Cole knew she was right. Joshua was a killer, and there was no telling what he would do next. He turned to walk back to her, but only saw the blanket lying in the sand. The streets of Cornwall were nearly empty. With the storm moving in, some citizens took shelter in their homes, while others were still at the cove. Poe drove through town and looked for Joshua's car. She was tired of playing cat and mouse. He killed her sister, Kennedy, and Melissa, and she was ready to do what the police hadn't managed to do so far. Catch him and make him pay. She parked Winnie in the alley behind the Suds for Duds and walked up and down the alleys of Main Street. Thanks to her past connection with the in crowd, she knew all their favorite spots. where they could slip inside and hang out to avoid going home for the afternoon. Her pace was quick, and her heart beat even faster. At each location she checked, Joshua hadn't been seen. But as much as she wanted to find him, fast, she stopped checking shops when she got tired of being asked questions about Dylan being found. News had already spread through town, which meant it would soon get back to her parents and the sheriff that she was on the hunt for Joshua Tubin. Poe raced back to Winnie and started to head toward the trails. Joshua boasted about spending so much time scouting, but as she reached the city limits, her eye caught his car at the end of a dirt road and heading south. Poe waited until the car drove out of sight. There was no need for her to hurry. The street led to a dead end at Brody Wynn's body shop. She pulled Winnie onto a small dirt road, hidden in the trees, climbed out in her still wet clothes, and ran through the woods and onto the property as Brody pulled the garage door shut behind Joshua's car. Poe snuck toward the building and placed her ear to the garage door, but only heard muffled words. She moved beyond the garage door and toward the corner of the building, then slid along the side until she came to a door at the back of the building. As the voices inside grew louder, she slowly turned the knob and was surprised to hear the latch release. She took a deep breath and then crept inside. "Why'd you ask me to come?" Joshua said. "I heard on the police scanner that the police are looking for you," Brody said. The voices moved toward her. "Figured you need a place to collect your thoughts." "Looking for me? What for?" Poe slipped into the dark, dingy bathroom, left the metal door slightly open, and looked through the crack between the door jamb and the door. "You tell me," Brody said. His voice was gruffer. "Hell if I know. Probably all the messing around you've been trying to do with Peyton." The sound of Brody's voice moved closer. She could see their legs down the hall. "Whoa, what are you talking about?" Joshua sounded less than sincere. "I've been watching. I know you're messing with her." Poe backed away from the door, moved deeper into the bathroom, stepped inside the bathroom stall, and slid the latch in place behind her. A heavy thud sounded against the outside of the bathroom wall. "Hey, man," Joshua shouted. "Cut it out, I was just joking around, trying to give her a hard time." Another thud. "Brody, stop!" A slap. Poe pulled her phone out of her pocket and typed a message for Cole. "I'm at Brody's. Joshua is here." She sent the message, slipped the phone back in her pocket, and peered out of the slit between the stall and the door. Her reflection looked back at her. Only... Poe studied it more closely. She didn't see a reflection. It was her class picture from junior year. She placed two hands on the door in front of her, leaned forward, and stared at the wall across from the stall. Photographs covered the wall. Photographs of Poe and her sister, Kennedy Melissa. She gasped, placed her forehead to the door, and studied the wall with one eye. An enlarged photograph of Ladybug caked in mud. Another of the bug in the early stages of the fire. A third of her parked in the cove parking lot. Brand new scratches marred the paint on the door. Snapshots of Winnie's interior. The bulkhead covered in research. Poe's files opened on the table. The shower stall, blanketed in memories. Photos of Poe inside Winnie. Photos obviously taken from the cemetery. Joshua broke through the bathroom door. Quickly, she looked over more photographs. Interior shots of her closet, her bedroom, and bathroom. Poe jumped onto the toilet seat and crouched into a ball. Joshua's head slammed against the stall door. His hair flew through the slit, then slid down the door as he fell to the floor. She stared at the latch and prayed that it would hold. She listened to her deep breathing. Her eyes darted around the stall until she closed her eyes and tried to concentrate on staying conscious. Chapter 25, August 16th, 2016, 5:35 p.m. Cole was glued to the television, and all the news only made matters worse. When he tried to make a run to his daddy's house, he didn't make it 3 steps outside before a reporter stuck a microphone in his face. His only option was to turn back around, head inside, and hide in his room alone. He'd pretty much stayed there, or at the flower shop since the news about Dylan's disappearance spread, and reporters flooded into Cornwall. First the vans pulled up outside the Bray funeral home, and lights, sound equipment, and cameras filled the sidewalk across the street as each station vied for the perfect shot of the morbid house that sat on the corner of Magnolia and Main. Those with the best camera angle managed to get the side view of the house, along with the loading bay of the funeral home and the cemetery, the perfect setting for a girl-gone-missing story. Within hours of the disappearance, the press caught wind that the missing girl was in a relationship with a boy who lived in the trailer park on the edge of town. Less than 30 minutes later, reporters set up camp at Cole's mama's house, her flower shop, and his daddy's club. It was only a few minutes more before a station reported an anonymous source saw Cole rush to work on the morning Dylan disappeared. His hair was a mess, and he was wearing the same clothes he wore to the bonfire the night before. There was a quick trial by gossip, and Cole was found guilty. He sat on the edge of the bed and kept a stern eye on his laptop. Live streaming coverage of the prayer vigil for Dylan started just a few minutes before, and the high school football stadium was almost full. 1980s hair band music played over the announcement system. It was loud and distorted, but obviously Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, one of Dylan's favorites.
"You aren't gonna go?"
Cole looked over at his mother, who stood in the doorway. She wore her favorite dress and heels. Unusual for her, but this was an unusual occasion.
"You look nice, Mom. Dylan loves that dress."
"I know." She smiled slightly, the kind of smile an anxiety-filled mother might give if she doesn't have words, but somehow wants to make you feel better. But in this particular case, there was no feeling better.
"Your dad and I thought we'd go together. He'll be here in a few minutes. Please come with us. It'll look strange if you aren't there."
"And it'll look strange if I am. Everybody already thinks I did something to her. The sheriff released a statement. Said you're not..."
"Since when do people care about the truth?"
Cole slammed his laptop shut. "I see the way they look at me. They think I did something. Which is why you have to go." He kept a stern eye on her as she walked into the room and sat down next to him.
"I think that since you can't help in the search..."
"I wanted to." He felt his frustration level soar. His temples throbbed. "They wouldn't let me. They said if I found her, it would only make me look more guilty."
"I know that. I'm just saying that I think you need to walk into that stadium with your head held high and show them that you're there because you want her back."
His body relaxed a little. "My head held high, huh?" She playfully bumped her elbow with his.
"Yeah, it's what all the cool kids do."
"I don't want to be cool. I want her back more than they ever could." He heard the front door open. Footsteps sounded on the mobile home floor until Carl appeared around the corner.
"Are we ready?"
Although his parents never lived together, Carl always made himself right at home when he was over, which was often.
"He's not going," she said.
"Yeah, you are.
Dad,
you're going. Get your shoes on." Cole swung his legs over the side of the bed and reached for a shoe as his relieved mother glanced over her shoulder at his father.
Thank you,
she mouthed. I was trained to read lips, you know, Cole quipped as he tied his shoe. Carl shoved his hands in his freshly pressed Wranglers. You're too smart for your own good. That's for sure. Cole stood and adjusted his hearing aids.
What are you doing?
His mom asked. If they're going to talk about me, let them talk. But I won't be listening.
5:55 p.m. Cole and his parents climbed out of the pickup truck, under the watchful eye of those who were already walking through the parking lot. There were murmurs, but that was nothing new. People from town had been murmuring about them for years. Cole followed his parents through the gated entrance and turned his hearing aids back up when they came face to face with Dylan's father, who stood in a receiving line so he could personally welcome and thank each person who came to pray for the safe return of his daughter. A visibly distressed David Brave hugged Cole's parents and then looked to Cole and placed a hand on each of his shoulders.
Hey, son. How are you holding up?
The gentleness and sincerity in his voice brought Cole to tears. Mr. Brave reached out, pulled Cole to him, and held him close as they both lamented her disappearance. In their tight embrace, they ignored the flash of cell phone cameras and the rush of reporters who wanted video of the moment so it could be the opening image of their newscast that evening. Eventually, he released Cole, draped an arm over his shoulders, and led him across the football field to the 50-yard line and onto the stage. To the awe of the more than 5,000 people collected on the football field and in the stands, Dylan's family, along with Cole and his parents, stood on the platform together. Cole focused on the crowd in front of him and did as his mama suggested. He held his head high. He felt every muscle movement, every breath that left his body. Hyper-aware, hypersensitive. It was impossible to act natural when appearing normal was the goal. The situation was anything but. Finn's father, Pastor Downs, walked to the microphone.
Thank you for joining us today.
The pastor's voice faded out of Cole's mind as he worked to concentrate on standing upright. The overwhelming circumstances, combined with the heat, left him reeling, and he slightly swayed under the mounting pressure. His pulse rate increased, sweat collected all over his body and ran into the corner of his eyes. His fingers twitched. If he didn't move, let out some of the accumulating energy, he'd for sure keel over. He slightly leaned forward and looked to his left, just past his mother, and over to Peyton. Her eyes were glazed over, as if she were heavily sedated. Her face? Completely blank. It was as if there was no soul inside. She was nothing but a shell of a person. Completely gone. In a soul-stirring moment, she slowly turned her head his direction. They shared a long gaze. A gaze that made his heart beat again.
Chapter 26, September 2nd, 2017, 10:15 a.m.
1,021, 1,022, 1,023.
Poe locked her limbs in place so she wouldn't tip over and squeezed her eyes tight. She was scared to open them, scared to look out and see Joshua laying on the bathroom floor. She feared that her recurring nightmares of finding herself in a bathroom stall, standing in blood, or perching on a toilet seat were more a premonition than a wild imagination. Poe listened to the sound of bulky boots sticking to the ground as Brody moved around the room. He chattered gibberish at a feverish pace. She listened as he pulled Joshua out of the bathroom and down the hallway. Joshua slid easily across the floor, proof that he couldn't put up a fight. Dizzy and lightheaded, she slowly lowered a shaking foot to the ground. Silence lay suspended in the heavy air around her. She peered through the slit in the door.
Brody's eyes suddenly stared back at her. The pupil dilated to the point that it nearly covered his iris. She screamed. The stall door flung open, slamming her in the head with a violent blow that threw her back against the water tank and set her cell phone into the toilet bowl. He yanked her out of the stall with so much force that she crashed into the sink and fell to the floor. Her heart skipped wildly when she realized her cheek sunk into a small puddle of Joshua's blood.
"What are you doing here?"
Brody's shout was more of a demonic growl.
I came to warn you about Joshua.
Her mind tumbled thoughts, searched for something to say.
It was self-defense, she blurted. Joshua attacked you. He's dangerous and hiding from the police. You protected yourself. I saw it.
Brody clenched her arm, drug her down the hall, past Joshua, and into the office at the back of the building. He tossed her into a metal chair, restlessly paced like a cougar. She tried to breathe, but hardly took in air. She couldn't catch her breath, couldn't believe her reality. Joshua lay in the hallway just across from the doorway.
Joshua's been following me.
Her eyes darted around the room. Messing with my head, she searched for a way out, doing things to make me think I was crazy, or something she could use as a weapon. Brody took a deep breath in through his nose.
You shouldn't have been doing that.
His pacing slowed but continued. Hands relaxed out of fists.
I'm on your side.
Pain shot through her back as she spoke.
He's horrible, and you and I both know it. Everyone in Cornwell knows.
She didn't care what she said, just that she kept talking. Anything to calm him down. Brody stared at the floor as he marched from the doorway to the desk, back again and again. She eyed the desk, spotted a razor laying next to a picture frame. When he turned to stomp toward the door, she grabbed it and hid it in her hand. The double edges cut into her closed fist.
What are you looking at?
He shouted, suddenly agitated again.
This picture.
She pretended not to notice the white powder that clouded the glass surface.
Is this you and your daddy?
He glanced up at her.
Why do you care?
She thought of Cole, regretted sending the text instead of calling 911. She now feared he would show up and fall victim to Brody's rage-filled wrath.
Like I said in the truck, I'm sorry about your daddy's death.
He was a drunk. Nothing to be sorry about.
She suddenly became aware of the razor cutting into her palm. She felt the blood fill her tightly gripped hand and ooze between her fingers.
He looks familiar. I think I recognize the smile.
Brody's gaze shot over to her, a look of disgust on his face. His pacing stopped. Then began again.
He laughed. Its tone sent chills across her body. It's crooked, same as you and your sister.
The pacing stopped yet again. He stared down at her.
He left me with this hellhole and bills I'll never catch up on.
With every word, his throat tensed. His voice turned colder.
All while you and your sister are over there living in the lap of luxury.
His breathing was so rapid he was nearly hyperventilating.
You want for nothing. The cars, the trips, the clothes. I don't have anything.
Poe's vision went spotty. The room started to spin.
You're just like your mama. Following in her footsteps with Joshua, you're going to end up knocked up just like she was.
He continued to pace.
If you would have just burned, along with Ladybug.
Poe watched Joshua open his eyes and blink while she tried to choke down Brody's words.
You did that.
Brody kept pacing.
The carburetor. You told me it was all about combustion.
He cocked his head toward her.
Trust me. If I wanted you dead, you'd be dead.
She watched Joshua slowly blink and struggle to focus on her.
You wanted to scare me. Mess with my mind. You keyed my car and made me think I somehow did it. The light bulb in my closet, the mud on the car, the coffee. All of it. That was you?
You're crazy.
No! You wanted me to think I was crazy.
We are crazy.
He instantly calmed himself.
It runs in the family.
His voice was low, dead sounding. She observed the tattoo on his calf and really looked at the image for the first time. A Celtic angel. One that closely matched her and Dylan's necklaces. Seeing it made her sick. She swallowed to keep bile from rising into her throat. The angel tattoo. She must have seen it in the bus station bathroom. That's why angels called out to her. She was drawn to them because her mind was trying to remind her of what she saw. Of who she saw murder her sister. With every step Brody took, more pieces of her crazy thoughts fell into place.
You told me Joshua was at the cove so I would go there. To the platform. And you left the necklace where I would find it.
Her vision turned static, and her heart pounded vigorously in her chest.
You made me believe Joshua was a monster.
He is a monster.
Brody's voice boomed, but quickly lowered to a whisper.
He's just a different kind.
We trusted you. Treated you like family. My daddy took you in.
Your daddy?
He pointed to the photo.
That man is your daddy.
He picked up the photograph and shoved it in her face. A cloud of white powder briefly hovered behind him in the air.
Look at him. Let that soak in. You're the daughter of a drunk old fool.
He thrust the photograph backward and slammed it on the table, shattering the glass.
He'd drive by your house every stinking day and watch you playing outside with your sister. I couldn't figure it out.
Brody's stride intensified.
He was obsessed. All he wanted was to see you girls, and your mama kept him away. He'd come home angry and take it out on me.
He picked up the frame and threw it against the wall. Poe pulled her body into the fetal position. As the remaining glass flew around the room,
he left me nothing but the stupid shop. You got everything.
We didn't, Brody. We didn't get anything. We didn't know.
Just because your mama didn't tell you doesn't make it untrue.
She gulped. His face hardened. His eyes closed to slits.
I found out about you in a will. He wasn't even man enough to look me in the face to tell me the truth.
He furiously swept his arm across his desk. The computer and many small objects went airborne and crashed to the ground around her.
If it was about revenge, why the other girls?
Dylan was for revenge.
He squatted down, picked a hammer up off the floor, stood, and gently placed it on the desk.
The others? For sport. I guess.
He noticed the surprise in her eyes.
Like I said, crazy runs in our family.
He crouched down in front of her, his eyes baring into hers.
Does that make you proud? Wish you would have known who your father was?
She stiffened her back, clenched her jaw, stared right back at him.
David Brave is my father.
Brody backhanded her across the side of the head. She fell to the ground and hit her forehead on the desk leg as she went. The razor dug deeper into her hand. He shoved her body with his foot. When she didn't respond, he walked out of the office, kicked Joshua on the side of the head as he passed, and headed into the shop. Poe lifted her head and watched Joshua as she listened to Brody throw tools around the garage and chatter recognizable words. But the sentences made no sense. Joshua's eyes were dead. Lifeless. She jumped to her feet and ran,
Drips of blood left a trail down the hallway and out the back door. The heavy door closed with a bang. Within seconds, Brody's work boots pounded on the dirt road behind her, and she could hear keys rattle in the pocket of his cargo pants. She ran toward Winnie. Her chest heaved with every breath. Poe shoved through tree limbs. The branches sliced into her skin like the blade still gripped in her hand. Brody caught up to her, just as she reached for Winnie's side door. He grabbed her by the hair and yanked her backward, lifting her off the ground. She turned to face him. In desperation, she retrieved the blade from her bloody hand and sliced his wrist. He recoiled, released her hair. Poe threw the door open. He lunged for her again. A growl surged out of his throat. She backed up the step. Brody's arm thrust through the doorway as she pulled the door closed, catching him on the injured wrist. He groaned in pain. She fell and turned her body away from the door, scrambled towards the back of the RV. She wasn't even halfway past the dinette before he grabbed her by the right ankle and pulled her toward him. "Brody, no! Don't do this! Don't do this!" He grabbed her left ankle, flipped her over onto her back, threw his body on top of hers, and held her to the floor so she couldn't take another swing at him. She screamed, "Shut up! Shut up! I'll kill you right now if you don't shut up!" He punched her in the face. Her eye socket felt like it would explode with the impact. Brody pulled a cushion off the couch, covered her face, and pressed down with one arm as he held her to the ground with the other. Poe struggled to turn her head, tried to find a way to get air as she thrashed around and slashed his arms with the razor. Her neck tightened. She tried to keep air in her burning lungs. When the pressure on her face momentarily lifted, she sucked in quickly, inhaled air and dust from the decades-old cushion. She continued to struggle, continued the fight until the air left her lungs and the razor fell from her hand. With no breath or energy left, she accepted her fate, stopped fighting, calmed. Her mind was at peace, fear completely gone. Her sister's voice seeped into her thoughts. "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death," Dylan walked into the kitchen and immediately laughed at her sister. She was helping their mama hang another cross on the kitchen wall, their collection growing, the scriptures flowing. "For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Something, something, yada, yada." Dylan ignored their chanting, as she always did, and dug through the refrigerator. Ghosts in the graveyard and corpses in the basement were surrounded by death. "If you think some verse is going to save us, you're crazy." "This isn't just some verse, Dylan," Peyton scolded, "and if you'd ever come to church, you'd know that." "I think I'll pass." Dylan grabbed a pickle out of the jar. "I'll let you be the good girl." She walked out as they started the scripture again. "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." She vaguely heard someone bound into the RV and felt a weight leave her body after what felt like a sharp impact above her. A large gush of oxygen filled Poe's lungs. She coughed at the dust still lodged in her chest. Her eyes flew open. She realized Joshua had entered the RV, and as he and Brody wrestled on the yellow linoleum beside her, Poe's left hand fumbled around the floor and to the cabinet under the sink. She opened the door, slipped her hand inside, and gripped the wrench.
"Joshua!"
Joshua rolled Brody in her direction. With no hesitation, Poe swung her arm and struck Brody across the back of the head. He went limp. His arms fell to his side. Joshua rolled off him, sat up, and took several deep breaths. Poe dropped the bloody wrench, grabbed the bottom of the stove, and pulled herself away from her half-brother.
"Joshua, are you okay?"
"I've been better."
A shout from Brody assaulted their ears. He reached for the wrench and swiftly swung it at Joshua. The strike to his jaw threw him onto his back. Adrenaline surged through Poe's body. She pulled herself away and crawled toward the bathroom. And when Brody again grabbed her leg, she pulled it from his grip and kicked him in the face over and over. As he grabbed for his nose, she shifted to her hands and knees and scrambled toward the only remaining space, the tiny shower stall. Backed into the tight corner, she set her sights on her sister's murderer. Visions of the boy she grew up with scrolled through her thoughts. The young man she drove the streets of town with, who Dylan defeated in the Cane of the Mountain. Her brother. He stared back at her, nothing but rage reflected in his eyes. As he rose to his feet, she pulled her leg back. Her knee touched her chest. "I will not fear you." She kicked him in the knee, hyperextended it. Seconds later, Joshua jumped onto his back, linked his arms under Brody's, and tried to pull him away. It was no use. Brody was too strong. He dropped to his knees as if Joshua were a small gnat and grabbed her by the neck. Brody slid his fingers around the sides of her throat and increased the pressure. Poe watched Joshua fight the beast, madly attacking him at every angle. Through the blood pounding in her ears, she vaguely heard a voice call, "Poe?" Could that be? She worked to focus her eyes as Cole appeared in the bathroom with the wrench in hand. After pulling Joshua out of the way, he slammed the tool against the back of Brody's head. He swung several more times until the monster finally went limp and fell forward onto Poe. She fought to breathe as Cole grabbed Brody's shoulders, pulled his head back, and tossed him to the floor. Cole stood with the crimson wrench, ready to strike. A police officer pushed his way through the side door, gun drawn, pointed toward the boys. "Get away from her!" Cole and Joshua backed up.
"It wasn't them," she rasped as loudly as she could. "It was Brody, just Brody."
The effort stole all the small gasps of air she'd managed to take, and she became numbly aware her head was rapidly tipping back, taking the rest of her body with it. "Peyton, are you all right?" She slowly opened her eyes to find the sheriff squatting in front of her. "Peyton, talk to me or move and let me know you're okay." Her left eye throbbed with pain and only allowed a small slit of vision. "Why don't you come out of there and let the paramedics check you out?" She shook her head as much as she could and huddled more closely to the farther shower stall. Closer to the photographs of her sister.
"I'm not sure I can."
Her jaw barely moved, and she realized her words slurred. "You're safe. They've gotten Brody out of here. He can't hurt you anymore."
"He killed my sister."
"I know he did. The good news is we've got him, and you three did as much damage to his face as he did to yours." She turned her eyes back to the wall. "You won't come out." Poe instinctively reached up for her pendant and felt that her shirt was ripped open. She tugged on it, trying to cover herself. The sheriff snapped his fingers. "Jacket." Within seconds, an officer handed him a coat. Sheriff Jackson draped it over her. "What do you need? Tell me what I can do." She processed the question, looked up at him.
"I want my mama."
He motioned for one of his men to do what he needed to fulfill her request, and then he focused right back on Poe. "She's right outside. They got here almost as fast as we did." Poe slowly nodded. "You did it, Peyton. I'm so proud of you. You did real good." He reached over and peeled a strand of hair off her face and tucked it behind her ear. She felt the floor quake as her parents bounded into Winnie. "She's in here. Please, don't touch her." The sheriff moved out of the way and allowed her mama to pass by. She took one look at Poe and started to cry.
"Oh, baby girl."
She climbed into the tiny shower stall, sat down next to Poe, and used the arms of the police jacket to pull her close. Daddy knelt down in front of Cole and looked him over as Poe ran the tips of her fingers across the dozens of photos that hung above her head in the shower. She swallowed hard.
"I haven't remembered much about my life. Everything's a fog. But this..."
She looked back at the photos, pulled one down. It was a photo of Peyton and her sophomore homecoming date, Trig.
This isn't my memory.
She pulled down a photo of Dylan and Cole at the same dance.
This is...